Hi everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. John Steele here. Some quick programming notes before the main show gets underway this week. First of all, you're going to hear Magic Mike Innes and JTalk Short Corner coming up first on the pod this week. That's because Mike is running through all of the J3 action from the big season finale, including the very exciting promotion race, as it turned out at the top. After the Short Corner segment, you're going to hear me talking to James Taylor at Kanazawa Dreaming on Twitter about how the J2 relegation dogfight eventually concluded last Sunday. After that, you're going to hear me flying solo. I'll run you through all of the other J2 games from the season finale, basically the matches that didn't involve anybody who was in the relegation dogfight or relegation zone before the last round. So I hope that's clear. And you enjoy the show. In a moment, you're going to hear Mike. He's got the JTalk Short Corner segment with all the J3 news. Enjoy the episode and talk to you soon. JTalk
Extra Time. Hello, everyone, and welcome to JTalk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on the Sunday games in round 30 that concluded the 2021 J3 season. And the only way to begin this week is by offering congratulations to Roasso Kumamoto and Iwate Guruja Morioka, whose Sunday results were enough to win both clubs promotion to J2. Kumamoto returning as champions to the higher division after an absence of 3 years. Iwate reached the second tier for the first time, having been founder members of J3 in 2014. Takebajano Miyazaki, who completed their fixtures last week, ended their debut J-League season in a very creditable third place. More than 11,000 people were in attendance at the Egao Kenko Stadium to watch Kumamoto take the title thanks to a 2-0 win over FC Gifu. Both sides traded near misses in the first half, Roasso coming closer to a goal when Naohiro Sugiyama's snap volley was tipped over by Kazushige Kirihata. It was 20 minutes into the second half when Kumamoto placed a foot in J2 when Sou Kawahara lofted a trademark free kick into the penalty area and Masahiro Sugata easily beat Shota Kawanishi to the header to set up Koki Sakamoto for a peach of a first-time shot from 25 yards, still rising when it hit the back of Kirihata's net. Promotion was sealed 7 minutes from time when another run down the right-hand side by Ball of Energy substitute Tales created panic in the Gifu defence. A cross was floated in and top scorer Toshiki Takahashi was free to head home his 8th of the season. 11,000 supporters united in celebration, the Espiritu de Kumamoto alive and very well. Arguably the story of the J3 season, however, and a counterpoint to the shock relegation from J2 of Big Guns Matsumoto Yamaga, is the promotion alongside Kumamoto of Iwate, who manoeuvred past Miyazaki into second place on goal difference via a 1-1 draw at Azoclaro Numazu. Iwate almost fell behind when Takumi Hama lashed a 30-yard free kick against the post in the 15th minute, but should have gone in front 13 minutes later when Masashi Wada put it on a plate for Brenner, whose close-range shot struck homekeeper Masataka Nomura and bounced away. The tension of the situation was writ large on the young striker's face as he contemplated the missed opportunity. When the breakthrough came, it was via a combination of two players crucial to Guruja's success this year. On the hour, set-piece maestro Taisuke Nakamura slung into the box a high free kick that caused panic in the Numazu defence, was fumbled by Nomura and ended up being prodded over the line by talismanic captain Yusuke Muta. The concluding paragraph of the J3 season narrative suddenly appeared to be revealing itself. Whatever happened in Kumamoto, if Iwate could take the 3 points, they would go up as champions. But football is not always so neat in its storytelling. Moments later, the game, the J3 title itself, should have been wrapped up in a quick counter-attack, Brenner unselfishly feeding Toi Kagami for a free hit at goal from 10 yards, which he somehow managed to put over the bar. And in the 65th minute, Azul Claro drew level, Kazuki Somaya getting round the back of the visiting defence and sending in a low cross for Junya Takahashi to turn and fire past Taishi Brandon Nozawa. Numazu pressed forward in the closing stages, Takahashi having a further effort just off target, but the game finished even and Iwate confirmed the unlikeliest of promotions, not as champions but as runners-up. With Tega Vajano occupying third, Katane Toyama's 1-1 home draw with Kagoshima United meant they held on to fourth place in the final standings. Toyama, who had stumbled out of the promotion race with only one win in their previous six outings, took the lead through Nobuyuki Shina's fourth-minute goal, an incisive finish at the near post after Shoma Otoizumi had turned inside out Kagoshima's makeshift left-back Yusei Kayanuma. Shortly afterwards, it was nearly 2-0 Makoto Rindo's powerful header from a Yuya Himeno corner, forcing a brilliant save out of Shogo Onishi. After showing little in the way of attacking intent in the first half, Kagoshima drew level 3 minutes after the restart through one of the goals of the week. Junki Goryo, Fugechi and veteran Noriyuki Sakimoto in his final match before retirement, combining superbly for Rei Yonezawa to score a rare-headed goal at the far post. Late on, Toyama substitute Yohei Ono had two clear chances to beat Onishi, but both were well blocked by the keeper and the game ended level. Kagoshima finished the season 7th, coach Nobuhiro Ueno steps down. They may have been held to a 1-1 draw at home by bottom side Kamatamari Sanuki, but Fukushima United still end the year in 5th, a best ever for the club. And a name to look out for next season is 19-year-old rookie Shoki Nagano, who, after scoring on his full debut in round 29, made it 2-in-2 starts to put Fukushima in front late in the first half, peeling away from defender Takumi Komatsu to clip Hiroki Higuchi's inviting cross inside the far post. Fukushima had chance after chance for a second, including a typical rocket from Tokachi which hit the bar in the 52nd minute, but couldn't make their superiority count. And sure enough, Sanuki tied things up with 7 minutes to go. A lovely flick from Kentaro Shigematsu, cutting open the home defence and allowing Wataru Sasaki to queue up Shunta Nakamura for a 15-yard finish. Something to celebrate for the travelling Kamatamari fans, reward for Nakamura, who has throughout the season worked tirelessly for his struggling team. Elsewhere, YSCC Yokohama completed the double over Fujieda My FC to bring to an end their three-game losing streak at Fujieda Sports Park. Captain Kento Dodate, such a key figure in the team this year, scored twice in the first 15 minutes to set YSCC on the way, the first coming from a meticulously planned and executed free kick from inside the D, the second a low shot from 25 yards after good work from Yuta Sato amid some chaotic Fujieda defending. The home side were made to pay for a disastrous attempt to pass the ball out from the back in the 64th minute as substitute Shuntaro Kawabe stole possession and squared it for Yutaro Yanagi to score. The game ended Fujieda 0, YSCC 3. The home side concluding their season in disappointing style, coach Daisuke Sudo being shown a straight red card by referee Kazuyoshi Karashima 5 minutes from time. YSCC are another club recording their highest ever league finish as they end 2021 in 8th place. Gainare Tottori concluded a difficult campaign with a 3-0 home win over Vanrare Hachinohe. Man of the moment, Yuya Taguchi made it 7 goals in 6 games to put Tottori ahead with a 16th minute penalty, and it was almost 2-0 shortly before half-time when captain Masataka Kani, playing his last game in the green shirt before being released at the end of the season, did brilliantly to set up Daichi Ishikawa, who hit the bar from 10 yards. But the same combination paid off early in the second half, Kani swinging in a left-wing corner, Ishikawa directing a clever header past Hayate Tsuta in the Hachinohe goal. Ishikawa went close again soon afterwards, but in the 52nd minute, another Kani corner, this time from the right, was headed powerfully home by Junior Suzuki. A dominant Tottori round off the season with 4 wins from the last 5 matches. Hachinohe looked like they'd run out of steam. Finally, AC Nagano Parseiro against FC Imabari ended in a goalless draw. The home side perhaps on balance had the better of things, but Imabari came closest to breaking the deadlock when on the hour Seigo Take managed to get in a close-range shot that Keita Yoshioka cleared off the line. The goalkeepers Soki Yatagai and Tomohito Shugyo ended up on top. Overall, clear signs of recent improvement for both teams to take into the closed season. The team with a bye in round 30 were Miyazaki. So, just to confirm the top and bottom of the final league standings in J3 2021. Kumamoto are promoted as champions with 54 points. Iwate also go up to J2 as runners-up with 53. Also on 53 points in third are Miyazaki, then it's Toyama with 46. At the other end of the table, the bottom four comprise Tottori in 12th place with 29, then Hachinohe, also 29, Numazu, 27, Sanuki, 21. That marks the end of the regular episodes of J-Talk Short Corner for this year. Jovial John Steele and I have plans to record season review pods in due course, but in the meantime, I hope you've enjoyed the coverage of J3 throughout the season. And with all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. So I'll hand you back to John and James to go through all the J2 action in J-Talk Extra Time. Bye for now. J-Talk
Extra Time. Thanks for that, Mike. John Steele here now with the J2 segment of JTET for this week. With J3 soundly wrapped up, I think we better talk about the J2 action as well. First of all, though, congratulations to Kumamoto, the J3 champions, and of course runners-up Iwate. It's going to be really interesting to see both of those teams in the second tier in 2022. But talking of the second tier, there's still plenty of loose ends for us to tie up. To help me with that, it's a welcome return to the pod for James Taylor this week. James, how are you doing?
I'm very relieved, John. How are you?
Well, I think I wasn't relieved at all because I didn't really have any skin in the game, as they say at the weekend, James. But I'm talking to you, I can kind of feel these vibes of relief, even down the Skype line. So I'm also feeling pretty chipper. Yeah, thanks. So James, round 42, the J2 marathon has finished. In this section, I'm just going to pick your brains about the big games from the bottom of the table, from the relegation dogfight from the weekend. So if it's okay, we'll start by talking about Giravants Kita Kyushu. Now, they needed a big win from their game at Yamagata to stand any chance of beating the drop and joining Matsumoto and Ehime in J3 for next year. It sounded like an unlikely scenario before kickoff, and it sounded even less believable at half-time as Kita Kyushu were trailing 2-0 thanks to a pair of absolutely sumptuous finishes from Vinicius Araujo in the first half. Kita Kyushu were handed a lifeline when they got a penalty in the 53rd minute. Half-time substitute Takemitsu Tomiyama was just about bundled over by Kosuke Yamazaki, and the referee pointed to the spot. But Yamagata goalkeeper Victor guessed correctly and save Tommy Ame's penalty. So surely that was game over for Kitakyushu. And yes, then they showed exactly why they're going down to J3 by giving away two very silly goals in quick succession, to go 4-0 down. In the 57th minute, Kitakyushu keeper Yuya Tanaka passed the ball straight to Vinicius under almost no pressure at all. The informed striker curled his effort off the post, but the ball quickly came back into the box where poor old Takaki Harigaya somehow managed to chest the ball down for Vinicius, opposing team striker, and he put the ball through Tanaka's legs for his hat-trick. Vinicius scored his and Yamagata's fourth just 4 minutes later. This time, experienced left-back Kenta Fukamori was messing around and gave the ball away on the edge of his own penalty area. Kota Yamada whipped in a cross for Vinicius to volley in at the far post. And for Vinicius, even in an injury-hit season, he ends the campaign with 14 goals. Impressive stuff from him. A consolation arrived for Kitakyushu in the 79th minute. Tommy Ama with a very nice kind of cut inside and finish from a ball over the top by Daigo Takahashi. But of course it was too little too late, and it was even 5-1. Martinos and Masamichi Hayashi combined. Martinos played in Hayashi after Yamagata turned over possession from Kitakyushu yet again, and the ex-Imabari striker dinked a beautiful finish over the shell-shocked Tanaka. Some absolutely brilliantly taken goals in this game, James. Just before I come to you for a comment, I saw on Twitter today it seems like Martinez might actually be leaving Yamagata this winter. I think he made a reference to that in an Instagram post. I'm over 30, so I don't use Instagram. I just rely on other people to tell me what's happened. But that seems like it might have some truth in it. But James, Kitakyushu relegated, Yamagata 5, Kitakyushu 1. Pretty emphatic stuff at Endai Soft Stadium. What did you make of the events there?
Yeah, it was emphatic, wasn't it? I think looking at the scoreline, it was a pathetic end to what has been a really poor season for Kitakyushu. Don't really have anything to add to what we've been saying all year. The attack was pretty poor for the first hour. Defence was even worse. Those four goals that Vinicius scored, the first one, he and the man who played him in were in loads of space. For the second one, there were two players supposedly covering him, but slightly too far away, so he had a free shot. The third was comedy defending and goalkeeping that we love in J2. And the fourth one, poor defence in the corner and lax marking in the box. For a team that needed a big win, this was, well, obviously the opposite of what they needed. And the fifth goal as well, Hayashi's goal, that came from a lost ball in midfield and in too much space for Martinez, and then the defenders letting Hayashi get away from them on the edge of the box. It was the scoreline and those moments were really poor from Kitakyushu. But in the first half, they did actually have quite a lot of possession and they did have some promising attacks, but they lacked that kind of final, a quality final ball, which again is what we've been saying about them all season. And that they did get stuck in their own area a few times. They're trying to play out from the back, but Yamagata were pressing from the front and Kitakyushu started panicking with the ball at the back, which is not a good idea, especially when you've got such a good attacking team as Yamagata coming at you. So I think it was not a surprise that Kitakyushu went down, bearing in mind they needed such a massive swing in goal difference, but it was a surprise to see them capitulate so badly in the last game. But I was really impressed again with Yamagata. They played some absolutely breathtaking football this year since Klamovsky took over. And I think you might have talked about this with Johnny last week, actually, but if he can get backing in the transfer market, and if they can keep, is it Kota Yamada, who's on loan, or if they can replace him with someone as good or better, you've got to put them in with a shout of promotion challenge. If they can iron out the inconsistencies as well in terms of their play and also in terms of their results. Because when they came to Kanazawa the previous week, they kind of reminded me a bit of Niigata. They just kind of pass it around a lot, but they weren't really doing anything, and they were vulnerable on the counter, which Kitakyushu did not take advantage of really in this match until the last half an hour or so, when Kitakyushu did actually start creating some good chances. They got the penalty, they had a well-taken goal, a few other sort of half chances or shots that went a bit wide or just over, but it was too little too late, because when you're 4-0 down after 61 minutes, well, I mean, there's just no chance, is there?
Yeah, I think all that's very true. And I think Kitakyushu, you mentioned they were sort of caught out by Yamagata's kind of high press a lot of the time in this game. I found that surprising, because it's kind of, you'd only need to watch a couple of videos of Yamagata to know that's what they're all about. I think maybe it was a case of, there's a big difference between knowing what the other team's going to do and being able to stop it. And I think what we saw was that Kitakyushu just, there really did seem to be a division between them, as there will be next year. And I think in a way, speaking as a supporter of a team that has suffered some relegations down the years, it's kind of easier to accept almost when that happens, when you do get hammered like that, because it just kind of reinforces that, it's not lack of effort on the players' part, but they just haven't been good enough collectively this year, I don't think. And if you have a narrow defeat, or if they'd come within a goal or two of staying up, then they might have felt that would probably have been harder to take. But I think this was such an emphatic drubbing, and they were obviously kind of it was a mismatch. Yamagata showed what's really needed to be a kind of competitive J2 side, I think, and Kitakyushu, for all of their hard work this season, they just didn't really have it, did they, as we've said many times on the pod. So yeah, commiserations to Kitakyushu supporters. I'm sure they'll bounce back sooner rather than later. And for Yamagata, yeah, I tend to agree, James. I think it's going to be an interesting winter transfer season for them. And assuming that we do have a playoff race in J2 next year, I'm still not sure. I haven't seen that confirmed anywhere yet. But if it is back to having a kind of top six to worry about, they'll definitely be in with a shout, won't they? You'd have to think. We'll move on. We've already talked about comedy defending and lax marking, so it probably brings us to Sagamihara. I suppose, yeah, the fourth team to be relegated down to J3 for next year. This is after losing 3-0 at Tokyo Verdy in a very sort of surprisingly flat performance, really. A win would have seen Sagamihara mathematically safe, so I don't know whether it was a case of, playing the occasion and not the game, or just big match nerves, but it was a disappointing, performance from them. Sagamihara were in trouble straight from the kickoff, really, at Ajinomoto Stadium, as Verdy took control early on. They went behind in the 17th minute thanks to a stunning goal from Mizuki Arai, someone who's played at Sagamihara in the past and tried to avoid celebrating, I think, as a result. He fired in a powerful 20-yard effort from the kind of angle of the penalty area. Then Sagamihara had two goals disallowed for offside. Firstly, a hooked effort from Jiro Kamata on the stroke of half-time, and then at the start of the second half, a close-range follow-up from Shu Hiramatsu. Both of those goals were chalked off. To be honest, I don't know if you agree with me, James, they both looked like pretty tight calls to me. I don't know if... I didn't get a good angle on the replay, of course, with DAZN, but I thought maybe VAR might have wanted to look at least one of those. But yeah, both goals were ruled out. And the game was up just after the hour when Ryoya Yamashita cushioned a long ball down for Ryoga Sato to lash in a drive from about 10 yards to make it 2-0. 13 goals in a very impressive debut season for Ryoga Sato. The victory was glossed even more with a third goal after some complete pinball madness in the Sagamihara box. Eventually, Verdy defender Daiki Fukuzawa took the opportunity to put the ball into the net to make it 3-0. And that defeat condemned Sagamihara to 19th place in the standings in J2. Obviously, the J3 games kicked off 1 hour later than the J2 one. So Sagamihara spent a pretty agonising 60 minutes hoping that Miyazaki would finish in the top two in J3 and give them a reprieve. But as Mike's explained in the J-Talk short corner, that wasn't to be. So finishing 19th, Sagamihara are down. James, Tokyo Verdy 3, Sagamihara 0. Even taking the offside decisions into account, I don't think Sagamihara can have any complaints, can they?
No, and I think I agree that they were close, but I think they were both correct. Although it's hard to tell with the angle of the camera, because they only gave the view from the halfway line. And when they're that close, on another day they might have been given as goals, and that would have swung it from 1-0 to 2-1. But I think, I with Takamihara on this one, it seemed like it was a bit of the nerves, because Verdi, look, for all their attacking prowess, they really suspect, or they look really dodgy bringing the ball out of defence. I saw this when they came to Kanazawa a few weeks ago, but they still pummeled us 4-0. But early on, particularly in the match, they look a bit shaky when they're bringing it out of defence. But because they're so good up front, they can kind of cover for that. That's why they finished comfortably mid-table, I suppose. And Sagamihara couldn't cope with Verdi's attacks, because Verdi did attack from the off. That early goal as well, it really helped me as a Kanazawa supporter, because I was very nervous, and I was really nervous about this match in particular. And I think that was after quite a lot of pressure from Verdi early on, but that really I kind of killed off Sagamihara. Even though it was only 1-0, they couldn't really get any much of a foothold in the game, and they did have to push forward, obviously, as the game went on, and that meant Verdi could get in behind. But that early goal was kind of a killer. I think looking at Takamihara as a their season as a whole, it would have been incredible if Takagi had pulled off that great escape. But in the end, they just didn't have enough, did they? And I think it's because they didn't strengthen enough in pre-season. I think that was a mistake. But in terms of, you know, them not quite making it out, to be honest, if you're in the relegation zone for 32 of the 42 rounds and you're bottom for 16 weeks of the season, I'm not sure you could feel aggrieved at going down. I think you can feel disappointed at falling short and taking it to the last day. But I don't think they can really have any major complaints about finishing in the bottom four. But they did give it a go, and they almost fought their way to safety. And I think, although obviously Sagamihara supporters and you know, people at the club will be really disappointed that they've gone down, I think they, looking at it from an outsider's perspective, they can be proud of the fact that they didn't finish dead last like pretty much everyone thought they would.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And we actually talked a little bit about this in our sort of 90-minute wide-ranging chat before we started recording. But it's all about kind of pre-season expectation versus reality, isn't it? I think the expectation was Sagamihara were going to really struggle. I thought they'd be bottom, and I thought they'd be adrift and maybe relegated with, you know, a handful of games left in the season. So it's almost it's obviously not a successful season if you end up being relegated. But in terms of their kind of, you mentioned the kind of winter recruitment, the outlay financially on players. I think the club will, maybe not right now, emotions are a little bit raw, but over time, I think that'll become to seen as actually quite a decent, in inverted commas, achievement to have taken it to the last day, you know, and to be in with a shout of survival. And yeah, perhaps if the results in J3 had gone slightly differently, we'd be celebrating a sort of great escape for Sagamihara. That's how close they were. But I tend to agree. I don't think you can sort of write off even the 42 game marathon in J2. You know, if you're poor for the first half of that season, if you're not creating any chances, scoring many goals, then it's going to be hard to get out of it. And they just, you know, maybe if the season was 44 games, Sagamihara might well be, you know, might well have been on the other side of the relegation line, but it's 42 games and they just haven't picked up enough points. Yeah, and I thought maybe that early goal for Verdi kind of just made the game very difficult for them tactically, didn't it? They didn't know whether they should go for it, you know, and bomb forward as much as possible. It's a dangerous thing to do against a team like Verdi with a lot of pace and a lot of good passes. So, it just turned out to be a real... I think some people on Twitter were saying that the J2 final day was a little bit anticlimactic, so everything kind of went the way it was expected to. And I think this was perhaps the most anticlimactic game in that sense, because it just, once Verdi scored, it always looked like it was going to be tough tough for Sagami Hara, but I think the experience of being in J2 for a year is going to do them good. They're going down now, with Kita Kyushu, with Matsumoto, and with Ehime, but I don't think they need to be ashamed or embarrassed. I think they've actually done themselves pretty proud, especially that second half of the season with Takuya Takagi in charge. So we'll wait and see how they regroup for next season in J3. Moving on, James, Omiya Ardija and Thespa Kusatsu Gunma both survived on the final day, with Omiya beating Gunma 3-1 at the NAC 5 stadium. There was a horrible start for Omiya in this game, as is traditional, I suppose, these days, as they gave away some cheap possession and a cheap goal in just the 7th minute. Defender Keisuke Nishimura's very weak attempt at switching the play was picked off easily by Toshiya Tanaka. He carried the ball into the final third and set up Junya Kato, who fired a low shot through Kazuaki Mawatari's legs and passed Omiya keeper Yuta Minami for 1-0. Omiya rallied though, and they turned things round by half time. Firstly, in the 16th minute, they equalised when I think it was Atsushi Kawata. He managed to make contact with a deep cross from Mawatari. Kawata's effort was actually blocked by Keiki Shimizu in the Gunma goal, but Shunsuke Kikuchi was on hand to snap up the loose ball to make it 1-1. Then 10 minutes before half time, Mawatari dug out a deep cross that found Kikuchi inside the Gunma penalty area. He laid the ball off, and then Yuta Mikado drove in an absolute beauty from about 20 yards to give Omiya a 2-1 lead. And in the second half, the points were wrapped up midway through the second period, with Kawata beautifully chipping Shimizu to make it 3-1 for Kawata. That's 7 goals since he arrived on loan from Tokushima in the summer. So a fantastic contribution from him to Omiya's survival. So, Omiya beating Gunma 3-1. James, in the end, I suppose the result didn't matter too much, but what did you make of events at the NAC 5?
This I had half an eye on this game, and it seemed pretty exciting. I know in previous weeks you've been wondering if Omiya are a bad team or just dozy, and I think in this game they're definitely dozy. That start was, it was the worst possible start, and I couldn't work out if that was poor goalkeeping by Minami for Gunma's goal or not. I think maybe he was a bit too far to the side or something. I don't know. But once Omiya sort of got their rhythm, they got that. I thought Kikuchi, he showed good awareness, alertness to get his goal. The rebound that fell to him, and after that, I think it was pretty much it was mostly Omiya. Mikado's goal was really, really good, wasn't it? Nice work from Mawatari and Kikuchi and Mikado. All three of them played really well in that move to set up that thumping strike from him. And Kawata's was a cool finish. He's been a really good loan signing, wasn't he? I think possibly, 7 goals in for a team that's struggling is big, isn't it? Especially in half a season or so. And together with Kurokawa's 9 goals and Nakano's 6, they actually were a high scoring team considering they were finished 16th. But obviously the defense was a problem. And I saw that, I think it was Dan Orlowitz retweeted an article saying that Omiya's main sponsor might cut their funding quite significantly for next year, which means if it's true, Omiya, they're going to have to cut their cloth accordingly, which could lead to another kind of chastening season in 2022, because I mean they're kind of a giant, aren't they, particularly in J2. So to see them down struggling in the second division is surprising, and obviously it's not something that they would want to be doing for too long. But if their funding's cut, it might turn into a kind of a vicious circle. Especially, I mean, if they spend all the money on goalies, they've got 7 goalies registered apparently this year, which is probably too many. And in terms of Gunma, they finished one place above the relegation zone, but I think that's pretty much what everyone expects from them. And, relegation trouble, but survival. You said it before, like they've got this kind of you know, club muscle memory of being in this situation and coming through it. So you have to wonder, I was wondering whether their luck will run out or if they're always going to be able to rely on at least two teams being worse than them. Because, we go back to just two relegation slots. Because they've always been strugglers, looking back over, previous seasons. They've never finished particularly high up. But, their aim surely was to avoid relegation, and they did that. So it's mission accomplished for them, isn't it? And I don't know whether they have the ambition or the resources and the structure to aim for more. But kind of wonder. I know Kyoto are being linked with everyone. But I did see somebody tweeted a rumor that Genki Ohmae is one of the players that Kyoto are interested in. And I think if he were to leave, you'll wonder what's going to happen to Gunma. Because I know they had a good spell without him midway through the season, but he's still hugely influential to them. And if they, if you take him away from that squad, you wonder what they have to offer. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't think anybody else in that team's ever tried a corner or a free kick, because he always takes them all. So, that might be the first problem, is finding someone who can kick the ball from the corner flag to the penalty area. Yeah, I think Genki Ohmae is this kind of... It's still kind of surprising that he's at Gunma in the first place. So it kind of wouldn't be that surprising if he left. I think the question would be how do they replace him? Shota Aoki's done really well after coming back from injury in the run-in. He's been a really important player. They do often have... They're a slightly more dangerous team than they often appear, if that makes sense. They can catch you on the break, and they can counter with pace like they did for the goal they scored against Omiya, even though they ended up losing the game. But yeah, I think Ohmae could well go. I'm not sure Kyoto's the destination, maybe, because I doubt he would get that much game time there. Even with his undoubted talents. I'd also give a shout out for a player who, in much the same way as I can't believe Genki Ohmae, is at Gunma, I can't believe a Hiroto Hatao, the centre-back, was let go from Omiya and ended up at Gunma, because he impresses me every time I see him play. I think it's mainly his aerial threat in the other team's box, actually, that is most notable. But I think he's a really good defender, a really good centre-back, and I think he's the kind of player who Omiya could have done with this year. So I think, again, if Omiya are going to have their kind of cash, their funding cut, that's problematic. But it doesn't help that in the past they've given away some pretty good young players from their team relatively cheaply, and it almost cost them this year. But I think that report about the funding, I don't know if it's true, but it does tie in with what I've suspected, that the manager that's been brought in, Shimoda, he is kind of a young, he works very well with young players. And I think that might be just my hunch is that a longer term strategy is to have him kind of bring through a lot more young players, either from Omiya's youth team or players he can take on loan from other teams around the country, like the job he's done at Yamaguchi in the past. So I don't have any inside information on that, but that definitely I can sort of join in the dots in my head, that seems likely. But I actually think for both of these teams there might be quite an interesting winter of upheaval on the playing side. I think Omiya for sure, they'll probably add another couple of goalkeepers to see if they can get up to 11. And then obviously a lot of other players, I think, will be cut. Players will come in. And same at Gunma. Yeah, you mentioned there are... I agree with you. I'm not sure. They don't really display any ambition to be much higher up the table. But I'm sure they'll see a side like Tochigi and Akita in comfortable mid-table and maybe wonder why they can't at least get up to that standard. So, they'll be looking to strengthen the team as well. Of course. The only thing I'll mention on this game before I move you on, James, is that when I had a very busy weekend for reasons that we won't go into on the pod, but I didn't watch much football on Sunday, but I did get a glimpse of this game. When I turned it on, Omiya had a corner, and I think one of the Omiya players, Ishikawa, his position was on the edge of the box for the corner, on the edge of the penalty area, but he was just very, very casually, like, stretching like his groin area, and he carried on doing that even after the corner had been taken, and a player was the corner was taken short, and someone was preparing a cross, and he was still like, he was looking at the ball, but he wasn't ready to like run in, or he wasn't ready to pick up a loose ball. He was just, you know, stretching like you might do like before kickoff. Yeah. And I just thought like, it would be a bit reductive of me to just turn on a match for 30 seconds, see one player casually stretching, and then extrapolate a whole point about it on the podcast. But it's, you know, it's I'm going to edit this show, so I will do. I just think if you're looking for an example of how Almia can just be a bit too casual, that was a really good example of like, you know, if I was the manager and I watched that back, I'd be like, can you not? Can you stretch? If you have to stretch, can you do it like until the corner's taken? But once the ball's in play, could you look lively? Like, could you look like you might be expecting to receive the ball? The ball might come to you. I just found it really strange. I don't know. I'm obviously making a meal of this, making too much of it. But yeah, I just thought it was weird. You often see players stretch, you know, in games. But when you're, his job is obviously to be on the edge of the box for like a loose ball or a knockdown or something. So you're not ready. You're not ready for it, man. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think I'm getting old. I'm getting old, James. I imagine all the young people are stretching willy-nilly nowadays.
Next week, you'll be complaining about gloves and snoods and colours.
Yeah, yeah, planking and, yeah, the Tide Pod Challenge, no doubt. Close season topics for us to delve into. But anyway, yeah, I guess sort of congratulations to Almia. They pulled off a great escape, and I think Gunnar will be pretty happy finishing outside the relegation zone as well. Won't they?
Almia, that's a pretty satisfying way to confirm survival. And also, don't forget, they went 3 months without winning earlier in the season. So they should be happy to finish 16th.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a good push. Well, let's move on to another team who's very happy to be avoiding relegation and also has some experience of long runs without victories. James, it's what you've been waiting for. Zweigen Kanazawa, they survived on the final day and ended up finishing 17th after a very creditable 0-0 draw away at promoted Kyoto. It looked like it could have been a long afternoon for Kanazawa, James, as Peter Utaka had two chances for the home side inside the first 10 minutes. The first one of these in particular, a header, might have caused the Kanazawa keeper, Masaki Goto, some serious problems if it had been a yard either side of him. I think, luckily, it was straight down his throat and he could drop on it and protect his goal. Kanazawa didn't just sit back and defend, though. I think they tried to take the game to Kyoto when they could. They had a good chance before half-time when Honoya Shoji just couldn't get his header on target from a corner. After the break, Riku Matsuda had another kind of half-chance for Kanazawa after he was put through by Shintaro Shimada's looping through ball, but the game stayed 0-0. Kyoto did have the ball in the net on the hour, but luckily the referee spotted a blatant handball from Ismaila, and the goal was disallowed. Ismaila got a yellow card for his troubles, I think. And there was a big chance for Kanazawa late on when Shimada's fierce shot was parried out to the penalty spot by the Kyoto goalie Keisuke Shimizu, but the ongoing Kanazawa attacker Shogo Rikiyasu saw his follow-up shot blocked by a covering defender. So it finished goalless, and at full time, after a short wait at the edge of the pitch to make sure that Sagamihara had indeed lost, Kanazawa could celebrate with their travelling fans. So yeah, Kyoto 0, Kanazawa 0. James, the guys did it. Well, congratulations. How does it feel?
It feels, yeah, a relief. It's not, this result was not as euphoric as the previous result, that win against Yamagata, which was amazing. But there was hope for Kanazawa going into this match because of that win against Yamagata. And also a little bit going back 5 years ago to 2016, the final match we had to go to promoted Sapporo, and we drew 0-0 in that one. But I think, yeah, in this match, Yanagishita set up the team in the same way as he did against Yamagata and chose the same players pretty much, which actually is quite bold for him, in that he put Shimada up front with Niwa. Even Shimada has been playing otherwise as a winger. But it worked quite well because Shimada is very skillful. And he had Rikiyasu on the right wing, which also worked well because Rikiyasu, of all the wingers, Rikiyasu is the one who probably is the strongest defensively and most likely to be able to stick to his tasks, even if his attacking needs a bit of work. I mean, he had a chance against Yamagata. He had a chance against Kyoto that perhaps a better or more experienced finisher would have taken. But, you know, it didn't matter in the end. But this was actually live on NHK, the national, on, be it on their cable channel, their national one, pretty because it was Kyoto's promotion party, pretty much. And yeah, at times it felt a bit like attack versus defense because Kanazawa set up to defend as a team and try to get something on the counter. It didn't pan out as well as last week or the previous week because Kyoto cut off a lot of the passing lanes because they're better than Yamagata. And also Kanazawa gave the ball away a bit too easily in midfield. We finally won it and then we'd turn it over quite quickly. And again, that's because Kyoto are a very good team and that's why they've been promoted. Their finishing was off though, I think. And they've just had three goalless draws to finish the season. So it wasn't an off day. It's been an off few weeks for them. So that's something that Cho will need to work on over the winter. But I mean, obviously, you talk about Kyoto, you talk about Peter Utaka, and he was very influential in this game because he was everywhere. He doesn't just play as a striker. He drops deep to get the ball and he's really hard to get the ball off him. But this point was really earned by Kanazawa. This was a really, really strong defensive effort from the whole team. There were Kanazawa players throwing themselves in front of shots and crosses throughout the game, which was a testament to their commitment and their effort, which, to be honest, hasn't really faltered through the season. Even during that long winless run, they were still trying. They just weren't playing well. They didn't give up. And they got the rewards in the end. We got the rewards by finishing the Dizzy Heights of 17th. And with a bit of luck, yeah, most of Kyoto's shots either went straight at Goto or were wide and over. But yeah, Goto, again, he was decisive. He was confident. He dealt with everything calmly without any problems. Basically, that is the story of the season. He's been superb. He's been really solid at the back. And without him, things would have been a lot worse for Kanazawa. And it's kind of interesting. It ended up being a really good weekend for Sho Hiramatsu, the winger, who's on loan at Kanazawa because he's on loan from Shonan. So they survived on Saturday in J1, and Kanazawa survived on Sunday in J2. So, I mean, obviously he doesn't want to be in relegation battles, but if you've got to be in a relegation battle, surviving on consecutive days is pretty good. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy. I mean, not happy with the season overall, but I'm happy that we're going to be a J2 next year. And I'm very intrigued to see what kind of decisions are made by the front office in terms of manager and playing staff. Well, I should say leading into next year, it's going to be a very interesting and possibly very busy winter.
Yeah, I think that's the same could be said about many teams in the second tier, James. It's going to be hard to keep track of everything that's happening during the winter break for sure. Yeah, I think maybe it's a good practice for which player did you say? Sorry, the who's on loan from Shonan, Hiramatsu. Yeah, probably maybe we can say that, you know, Hiramatsu's a successful relegation battle at Kanazawa might be good practice for next year's relegation battle at Shonan.
Kanazawa, if his loan's extended.
Yeah, Kanazawa again. Yeah, God. Okay. Yeah, prediction time. Yeah, and I think I'm glad that you mentioned Utaka because I think he's sometimes the work that he does off the ball is not really appreciated as much. And I think Pete Utaka is one of these players who to throw a cliche, and he has a very good habit of turning a bad pass into a good pass. So one of the things I noticed about him is I often have to look very carefully when he gets a header on a cross or receives a pass. My initial instinct is often it's a good cross or a good pass, but it's not always. But he always kind of seems to make something of it somehow. Like you notice when the pass is like overhit to him, he still is able to control it. Or if it's underhit, he's anticipated that and he gets there first. So I think that is a skill where, you know, he's an elder statesman of the team now. And, you know, I think that's going to perhaps give him some trouble in J1 next year. But his actual, like, football brain and his touch are unbelievable. So, yeah, he's a great player. Great player to watch. Always enjoy watching him.
Another thing I'd say about Kyoto, they look to attack a lot down their left using Ogiwara and And Utaka was heading down that side as well quite a lot. And that means they're targeting Riku Matsuda at right back for Kanazawa. And I think he's had a pretty hard year, Matsuda. I don't think he's had a lot of bad games or a lot of games where he's struggled. And I think that's because he's not actually a right back. He's more of a center back, or at least he's not used to playing right back in a back four. But he dealt with it really, really well. He was really good on Sunday, so I'm really pleased for him that he had that really positive end to the season.
Yeah, I agree. I always feel sorry for players when they get hung out to dry out of position against someone who's, you know, really good, because it's I think you're kind of on a hide into nothing in that situation, aren't you? Yeah, very much so, very much so. Yeah, all good, and congratulations, James. And it's really good to hear that you. Yeah, you'll have a few good nights sleep now between now and February, and yeah, maybe your family will be able to stay at home on a few Sunday afternoons. They won't have to go out to you know, give you some space to watch the games. Yeah, fantastic. Okay, yeah. So just to wrap up then, just to make things crystal clear, the bottom four in J2 finish like this. Okay, Matsumoto bottom, and then Kitakyushu actually finished second bottom on goal difference. They were level on points with third bottom Ehime, and as mentioned, Sagamihara lost that loss against Tokyo really condemned them to finishing in 19th. So Matsumoto, Kitakyushu, Ehime, and Sagamihara, we say sayonara to them for now. They go down to J3 for next year. Teams that survived on the final day were Gunma in 18th and Kanazawa in 19th. They ended up finishing 3 points clear of the drop zone. Omiya a little bit higher up. They finished 1 point better off than Gunma and Kanazawa. So well done. Well done to all involved. Okay, James, I can't let you go without asking you a couple of questions that came in from, a new listener, M. Innes. Or possibly Mike I. We could refer to him as, to protect his identity. The first one's about Jeff United. Now, there's some games we haven't talked about in this section, but I'm gonna sort of add on a review of those after this. So yeah, please stay tuned for the rest of the round 42 J2 action. But Mike's question was about Jeff. They had a really, really strong end of the season. You know, the last couple of months, it's already been announced that Yoon Jong-hwan, the coach, is staying on for next year. So what do we think? He asks, are Jeff like no longer Jeff?
Jeff will always be Jeff. I've been watching that the Zone documentary series. It's been really interesting. But I think modern Jeff, this is a Jeff trick. They're doing what they normally do, except they're extending it. So they're playing well over a period of a few months, getting our hopes up. So come next season for our pre-season predictions, we'll be thinking, oh, they were really good at the end of last year. They'll continue that and be really good this year. But they won't. They'll go back to being their normal Jeffy selves and be a kind of mid-table, occasional calamitous, occasionally brilliant team.
I tend to agree. I think Mike's deliberately concocted these questions to try and make us look foolish, James. I think it's a sinister plot. I think I would just add on to that. I think keeping Yoon as the coach is an absolute is a very smart move and a no-brainer, because he's really been the catalyst for them to look a lot more like a kind of serious football team, especially in the second half of this season. I will add, they will probably need to reinforce the squad in a few key areas, because I think one of these standout players this year, kind of in the hole behind the striker, has been Tommy Amiki. Yeah. And he is probably done, as a Kanazawa supporter, you might be familiar with this, he's perhaps done a bit too well this year, and he's not going to be able to slide under the radar for next season. And I would add on to that, I think, possibly they'll get one more year from the big battering ram up front, Solomon Sakuragawa, who I often write powerful header from him in my notes, and then I realize all the headers I've ever seen him do are powerful, so I should just a header from now on. But I think he might get one more. He's still very young and raw. He might get one more year at Jeff before bigger clubs come and try and take him away. But I think, yeah, if they lose Tommy Amiki, that's going to be a hard blow to recover from. But I think they're traveling in the right direction. You mentioned the documentary series on DAZN, a feel good factor about the club, and the new uniform, new kit, which is a pretty stunning effort from Hummel. So I think all the conditions are in place. Hopefully they can sort out the pitch at Fukuda Denshi for next year, which has been looking very rough. this season. And I noticed they're also selling, and I just can't do this, but somebody out there might want it. They're selling a Blu-ray of every Jeff goal ever scored in the 25 years. And Jay, did you see that? I don't know how much it is. I didn't dare click on the link, but yeah, they've got this Blu-ray box set of all the Jeff goals ever. I think it's just the Jeff goals. I don't think any Yuya Sato own goals are in there or anything, but yeah, okay. All right, swiftly to conclude, James, one more question. On Matsumoto, relegated in last place this year, they've already announced that their coach, Hiroshi Nanami, is going to stay on. You know, he's re-upped his contract for their season in J3 next year. Seems like a bit of a bold move, considering that they were pretty poor even when he took over. So what do you think about that one?
Yeah, I was quite surprised to see that he is staying. But because they didn't seem to improve at all after he took over. But I, thinking about it, maybe, I mean, it wasn't his squad. He didn't recruit those hundreds of players that they signed last winter. So perhaps they're going to back him to sort that out, because it's a mess, and get the squad into the sort of shape it should be in, and have a go at J3 and try and come straight back up, because I'm sure they'll be thinking that they shouldn't be in J3. They're too big to be in J3. But I have no idea how it's going to go, because as we saw a few years ago when Kitakyushu went down, they sunk straight to the bottom of J3. And we've seen teams like Gifu go down and kind of get stuck in mid-table J3. And then, well, Gunma and Kumamoto went down and had a couple of years, didn't they, and came back up. So who knows? I have no idea how it's going to go, but it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, well, he'll be one of the best dressed managers on the touchline in J3, I think, for sure. He was quite sharp line in suits and formal wear. But yeah, I think it's a weird one. I almost wonder if when he came in midway through this season or at the tennis, and perhaps it was already written into his contract that he'd keep the job no matter what happened, whether they went down or not. But yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating. I'm not sure how much he actually knows about J3, to be honest. You know, obviously it's not rocket science. He's a very, very, very good player in his day. He knows what he's talking about when it comes to football. But yeah, I just think it's going to be... I mean, Matsumoto being down in J3 is fascinating enough, but they have this like other layer where they have a manager who I don't think anybody's really sure what to expect from. I think the bigger question is probably, do I think he's still going to be manager, you know, in December 2022? And my balls tell me he won't be. But I don't know. As we often disclaimer that we often add it around this time of night, James, we're wrong sometimes on this pod. But yeah, I think it's a bold call, and it's not as if they. I mean, if Sagamihara announced that Takuya Takagi was staying, which I don't think they have yet, but that would be a lot less surprising, wouldn't it? For next year in J3. So yeah, I think it's a bit of a weird one. They've gone very early. They haven't sort of scoped out the market to see if other managers are available, I don't think. So yeah, maybe they know something. Maybe they know something we don't. But yeah, for sure it'll be a hell of a ride. All right, James, thanks so much, man. It's been really good to talk to you again, and thanks for all your contributions this season. Hopefully we're going to hear from you again soon, because we've got our J2 review of the season pods coming up in the next couple of weeks, I suppose, and hopefully we can get you on to help out with those if you're free, if you're willing and able.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, before I go, I just want to say thanks to you and Mike and Stu and you guys for all the work and time and effort you put into to making the pods every week, because it's always a good listen. I look forward to it every week, not just the weeks that I'm on, and I'm sure all the other listeners as well are grateful for all the time and the work that you guys put in. So thank you very much.
Oh, James, I've got something in my eye. That's very kind. Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much. Yeah, but no, listen, really, it's thanks to people like yourself and you know, other contributors, you know, co-hosts and listeners. They make it all worthwhile. So yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks to you, and thanks to all listeners for another strong season. Shall we say, you know, ticking over nicely. We're kind of Jeff United, a work in progress, as ever. But yeah, okay, James, we'll leave it there for now, if that's okay. But yeah, it's not the end of the pod yet, so please stay tuned after a little burst of music. I will be back solo, and I'll review the rest of the action from the final day of the J2 season. Hi again, everyone. Time now to round up the rest of the action from the final day of the J2 season, round 42. Champions Iwata rounded off their campaign with a 2-1 win at home to Akita. Iwata went in front in just the 6th minute when Kosuke Yamamoto's long ball over the top sent Daiki Ogawa clean through, and he confidently beat goalkeeper Yudai Tanaka for 1-0. Akita pulled level 8 minutes before half-time. After a nice one-touch move, Yosuke Mikami laid the ball off for Ryota Nakamura to clip in off the post from just inside the penalty area. It wasn't until the 79th minute that Iwata scored their winner, a lovely curling effort from 18 yards from Naoki Kanuma after being set up by Lukian. Kanuma scoring his first J-League goal. So it finished Iwata 2, Akita 1, Akita ending their maiden J2 season in a very respectable 13th place in the table. A fantastic effort from everyone there. Akira Ito's tenure as Kofu boss ended with a very entertaining 3-3 draw at home to Mito. Kofu's best chance in the first half fell to Motoki Hasegawa, who forced a good save from Ayumi Niyakawa in the Mito goal. So it was 0-0 at half time, but things got crazy after the break. Mito hit the front 2 minutes after the restart. Kofu thought they'd conceded a free kick near the edge of their own penalty area, but play was waved on, and eventually Ryo Nisato sent in a low cross for Ryotaro Ito to make it 1-0 to the visitors. The lead only lasted for 7 minutes though, as Riku Yamada traded passes with William Lira, got clear inside the box, and equalised for Kofu with a cool finish. And then a classic J2 goal rush was on the cards as Mito retook the lead on the hour mark. Brazilian defender Mendes put his team in trouble with a bad back pass, and although Kofu keeper Kohei Kawata did his best to hold things up, the ball was eventually worked to Masato Nakayama, who fired in for 2-1. But it was 2-2 just 3 minutes after that. William Lira volleying in Sho Araki's low cross at the near post. And there was still time for more. Mito thought they'd won it when they went 3-2 ahead in the 82nd minute. Kai Matsuzaki skillfully rolled Mendes on the halfway line, then carried the ball into the final third and sent Ryotaro Ito clean through to score his second of the match. But Kofu weren't done either, and in the first minute of stoppage time, a swirling left-wing cross from Araki was met with a thumping Mendes header for 3-3, Mendes making amends for two big earlier mistakes in this game. Kofu were denied a win by a fantastic late save from Mito keeper Niyakawa. He somehow got down low to parry a header from Kazushi Mitsuhira off the line, and it finished Kofu 3, Mito 3. Kofu ending the season in third place then, 4 points adrift of the promotion places in the end. Mito finish 10th. Fourth place Nagasaki won 2-1 away at already relegated Matsumoto. Asahi Uenaka put Nagasaki in front in the 26th minute when he touched home a left-wing cross from Ken Tokura. Another excellent finish from the impressive youngster Uenaka. Uenaka went clean through shortly afterwards, but saw his shot blocked by homekeeper Kentaro Kakoi, and then Kakoi had to tip a fierce drive from Ken Tokura over the bar as well. Nagasaki doubled their lead right at the start of the second half. Shunya Yoneda put in a high cross that Wellington Ratto headed goalwards. The ball somehow crept between Kakoi and the post and went over the line for 2-0. Matsumoto pulled a goal back in the 55th minute, Taiki Miyabe sweeping in a loose ball after Itsuki Enomoto had seen his diving header blocked on the 6-yard line. But that's how it finished, Matsumoto 1, Nagasaki 2, and this was a farewell game for retiring veteran striker Keiji Tamada of Nagasaki, so he got a nice big bunch of flowers from the Matsumoto staff at the end as well. So yes, Matsumoto 1, Nagasaki 2, full-time score. Machida finished off 2021 with a very impressive 2-0 win at Niigata in Albert Puig Ortaneda's last game in charge of Niigata. It's been confirmed that he'll be taking over FC Tokyo in J1 next season. Machida created chance after chance in the first half. Niigata keeper Koto Abe made a great save from Kaina Yoshio's header midway through the half, and then Dudu hit the outside of the post on the follow-up. Dudu made a mess of two other very good chances in the first half as well. This game paused in the 30th minute as retiring veteran Tatsuya Tanaka
made captain and starting for the day on the Niigata side, was substituted. Both sets of players formed a guard of honour on the halfway line as he went off. Yeah, in tears, but yeah, well done to him. Fantastic career coming to an end. After that, Yoshio nearly put Machida in front after some neat footwork and a stinging shot, but Abe was just about able to get the ball around the post for a corner. Machida did take the lead 5 minutes before the break, though. A well-worked corner kick routine, one of many from Machida on the day, saw a low ball delivered to the penalty spot where Kaishu Sano swept in a low volley. Midway through the second half, Dudu did get his goal to make the points safe for Machida, and it was a brilliant finish. He was set up by a superb backheel from Takuya Yasui, and then Dudu expertly chipped the ball over Abe for 2-0. And that's how it finished. Niigata 0, Machida 2. Machida end the season in 5th place, and Niigata 6th. Jeff Chiba ended their promising 2021 campaign with a 3-1 win away at Okayama. The away side went in front on the stroke of half-time through Rui Tsuyoshi when a free kick from Taishi Taguchi was only cleared to the edge of the penalty area. Tsuyoshi's shot took a deflection on its way into the back of the net. Jeff then doubled their lead straight after the restart. Another Taguchi free kick led to a whole host of Chiba players lining up to shoot, despite a valiant effort from an Okayama defender on the goal line, who headed the ball against his own crossbar when blocking a shot. Eventually, Solomon Sakuragawa was able to head the ball over the line for 2-0. In the 63rd minute, it was 3. Great work from Sakuragawa and Saldanha led to the Brazilian striker's shot being palmed away by Togo Umeda in the Okayama goal, but the ball was returned into the box immediately by Tsuyoshi for Tomoya Miki to tap in his 14th goal of the season. Absolutely brilliant, brilliant goal scoring return from him. There was a consolation goal for Okayama late on when Hideki Ishige charged down a clearance from Jeff, and then Lee Yong-jae scored an absolute beauty with a curling shot from the edge of the box. I know this goal is going to be lost in time because it wasn't the most important moment of the round, but a fantastic goal all the same. Okayama had brought on their veteran goalkeeper Kazuma Shina for the last few minutes, and he came up for a very late corner. The ball seemed to touch him last and then hit the Jeff crossbar, which would have been a fantastic way for him to bring the curtain down on his Okayama career. But it wasn't to be, and it finished Okayama 1, Jeff Chiba 3. Okayama finish 11th, and it's been announced this week that their new coach for next season will be Takashi Kiyama. So interesting to see how he gets on at City Light Stadium in 2022. Ryukyu came from behind to win 2-1 at Tochigi and finish 9th in the table. Not a great deal happened until the 64th minute at Kanseki Stadium, but then the home side took the lead. Captain Yasutaka Yanagi with a fine low drive after combining well with Sho Sato just inside the penalty area. 8 goals this season for Yanagi from the centre-back position. Absolutely incredible in that Tochigi side. Ryukyu replied just 5 minutes later. Koya Kazama crossing from the right and Koki Kiyotake heading in from close range. In the 76th minute as well, the visitors scored their winner. Tochigi just couldn't clear their lines properly from a corner, and eventually veteran striker Shingo Akamine put in a deflected shot that beat Paul Obina Obi for 2-1. And that was the final score, Tochigi 1, Ryukyu 2. Obi has returned to his parent club, Yokohama Marinos, for 2022, so he'll be missed at Tochigi next season. Tochigi also have a new manager in the form of Yu Tokisaki. It's been officially announced. Tokisaki took Fukushima to a very impressive 5th place in J3. This season, he'll be taking charge at Tochigi for 2022. And just finally, time to mention Ehime, who ended their time in J2, their J2 era for the time being, with a 1-1 draw at home to Yamaguchi. Yamaguchi went in front about 10 minutes before half-time with a sublime outside-of-the-foot through ball from Kensuke Sato that sent Kento Hashimoto clean through, and he coolly dinked the ball over Ehime keeper Masahiro Okamoto for 1-0. And it was almost 2-0 before the break as Kazuma Takai saw his shot blocked almost on the goal line by an Ehime defender. Aimé's equaliser came 14 minutes from full-time from Takashi Kondo, who had a pretty lively and impressive game overall. From out wide on the Aimé right, Kentaro Moriya played a lovely ball to find Kondo somehow clean through right in the centre of the pitch and bearing down on goal, and he confidently beat visiting goalie Daisuke Yoshimitsu to earn his side a point. So that game finished Aimé 1, Yamaguchi 1. So that's a rundown of all of the J2 action from round 42. I hope everybody's enjoyed the pod this week. Please stay tuned to JTET though, because we're going to have some J2 and J3 season review content coming up during the winter break, and of course previews for next season as well when the time comes. But we'll leave it there for this week. Thanks as always for being a listener to the show. And if you support the JTalk podcast on Patreon, we appreciate that a great deal as well. So thank you very much. Yeah, hope you've enjoyed the regular season. And stay tuned, because season review pods will be dropping, as the young people say, fairly soon. That's all for this week, though. Take care and bye for now.